From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Mark Russo will be here from Risk Pulse in Chicago. He's a meteorologist, and today he'll take us through all the flooding conditions that are happening or have been happening along the Iowa-Nebraska border, mostly Nebraska and, well, into Iowa, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, but that I-29 corridor along the Missouri River has been really difficult. He'll discuss some of that and what the problems may be going forward as it relates to snowpack across the whole of the Mississippi River Valley Basin. Along the way, we'll also check in with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County to discuss the cash grain market on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media, it's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now looking at what happened in the futures market for the day with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
It looked like it was a relatively quiet day in Chicago in the overnight trade. Is that truly the case?
Yeah, it was somewhat orderly fashion. I think headline news kind of limited the buying interest on uncertainty of U.S.-China and getting a deal inked. There's some talk that maybe this could not be really materialized until June, so that kind of limited the buying interest. I think probably weather was the main feature in here due to the fact that you take ground west of the Mississippi, it's extremely wet. You know, they were hit with the blizzard conditions. Now they're unthawing with some rain around. Minnesota, a state of 10,000. Bad for them because, you know, it's a situation where livestock have suffered significantly. We've seen on the news that entire towns have been isolated by this. So it's going to take a while for them to get this water drained off and dry out, repair roads. And it's going to be some type of a situation where they're going to need some assistance with rebuilding in some areas because it's a major deal. And for the agriculture in general got feel out for them, especially those livestock guys that had to deal with calving and even loss of livestock out there, Todd.
I know I mentioned as we were reading the numbers going into this that the spring wheat was higher. Is that simply on the idea that we're going to be late enough that they've got to try to push farmers in Minnesota and the Dakotas to plant more spring wheat or at least to plant the acres they intended?
We feel so, yeah. There was quite a bit of spread activity buying Minneapolis. That's the spring wheat contract, selling Chicago or even selling some KC. That spring wheat, that's a real sensitive contract. That is the contract where we got into the deliveries 1 year, and there was real tight supplies, real tightly held, and it ran to $25 a bushel. So that's going to be the thing in here as they watch that weather. As long as that weather stays wet or cold, if they don't get that spring wheat in, that spread's going to continue to gain some ground there, Todd.
In just a couple of weeks, a little less than that now, USDA will release its prospective plantings report. This is a survey of producers, and it may have changed by now given the conditions out west. But what do you think it will show for acreage?
Well, I think you're dead on there. We're narrowing that gap in there. That USDA form might have been extreme. Inform of commodities might have been extreme. I believe one of the major houses came out here and showed corn acreage about 90.4. That's up about 1.3. And bean acreage, 87.7. That's only down about 2 bushels to the acre. So I think that's going to narrow up and through here. We'll have to watch the weather maps. We've got a little dry window. It's going to be more favorable for the eastern belt versus the western belt, but that's definitely going to be the talk here for the next 30 to 45 days.
There are a couple of things in the livestock market. I wondered how or if it impacted anything at all. There was a story over the weekend that they had taken in some imports from China that weren't supposed to have pork in them, and they were smuggled in, frankly, nearly a million pounds of pork. Fear, of course, that African swine fever, which can be carried in the muscle cuts, might be there, only infectious if it's actually fed to another hog. However, that was kind of a big deal, I think, and there was fear there. What did happen in the marketplace, if anything, because of that?
Well, I think that's huge. It says the authorities are on top of it, and for them to step in and find that and stop that, that's huge. That's part of the system there, and you know, it's a serious issue, and that's the last thing we need to have is our pork infected. In fact, if you were at the beef house there, we talked about how much demand this could spur, about those buying call options for 50 to 75 cents. Those call options are now worth $4 to $5. Hogs have rallied $10 here over the last week. If China's pork production falls, say, 15%, that creates about a 1.5 billion pound deficit per month. And if we were to come in and capture that business, because hogs are raised in Canada and Europe, and they won't just source the U.S., but if we just capture 25% of that business, that equates to about 380 million pounds per month of usage. And when you figure that in to the per capita consumption and the ending stocks in pork month to month, that would be enough ammunition to push hogs up the old contract high of $133. So this hog market's explosive if we can ink out a Chinese deal, and if they come to the U.S. and some of the other countries to buy that shortfall. And if you look at a hog chart, that back end on these hogs have just been virtually straight up here for the last week. The other part, too, is weather in the Western Belt. Even though beef supplies are expected to be show a large increase going into the second quarter this year, with the death loss we're seeing out west and the lack of weight gain out west, you know, pork is going to pick up some of that benefit also. So this whole meat complex is going to be a good market to watch here for the next 3 to 4 months.
Hey, thanks so much for helping out with it. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, over the weekend, the South China Morning Post, that's the English-language Hong Kong-based newspaper, reported that President Xi and President Trump are not likely to meet to talk about a final trade deal in April or May, and probably not until at least June or maybe later. On that note, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, in an official release from the United States Department of Agriculture, says that China has made some interesting and substantial offers as it relates to ag purchases.
It's never over till it's over with those kind of agreements. China has laid on the table some very attractive numbers regarding ag purchases. But there again, we're still in the negotiation phase, and I don't want to raise expectations if we're not able to come to an agreement. So it's probably appropriate that I not talk about numbers there this morning, other than what you've heard and read about. But they were very attractive. If we're able to get some of the enforceability over the intellectual property, over non-tariff barriers, it would be good for agriculture and good for the U.S. economy. But the enforceability provision, agreements have been made before that have not been lived up to, and that's the challenge, that's the threat.
A challenge and a threat that the administration has been trying to meet through trade negotiations, and that it compensated producers for lost business last year for, to the tune of some $8 billion to farmers under its trade relief program. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue is on record saying there will not be another compensation package for the 2019 growing season, as he expects farmers to adjust their acreage allocation to reflect the current marketing conditions. Those conditions are not great at the moment, and the weather isn't helping. Farmers and ranchers have been hit hard by flooding in parts of the Midwest following the bomb cycle winter storm last week that brought heavy rain, winds, and snow. Emergencies have been declared in Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Flooding claimed the lives of at least two people in Nebraska as of Sunday, including a farmer who was swept away while using his tractor to try to help stranded motorists. The damage is likely to shake cattle, hog, grain, and other commodity markets. Archer Daniels Midland closed its massive ethanol-producing plant in Columbus, Nebraska, and Cargill shuttered grain elevators in Iowa and Nebraska. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here at the University of Illinois, a grain market specialist. Thanks for being with us, Todd. On the 29th of this month, USDA will release its prospective plantings report. That's the acreage report, or commonly known as the survey that they do of producers. They've completed that, and many folks have started to put out a whole bunch of numbers. Have you put together any assessment?
Well, I have a model I use, and I mainly focus on corn and soybean acres, but I try to do different kind of crops. My model, I've been at about 85.7 million acres of soybeans and 91.8 million acres of corn for the last couple of months. It hasn't really changed that much in my estimation. There's a lot of speculation out there that we may see less corn acres than that due to some of the weather we've seen throughout the Corn Belt this year, and I'm receptive to that idea. I like the idea of less corn acres, and, you know, we see the flooding going out in Nebraska and Iowa, and it's just horrible. I wish the best for those folks, but, you know, with the kind of snowpack we see, the kind of wet weather we've seen, fertilizer prices, lack of field work in the fall, I think some of that's getting priced in the market in corn. USDA has corn acres at 92 million acres. I think we'd have to see a significant deviation from that kind of acreage to get a really good price response from the March report. But it's feasible. It's feasible. So,
you take this up in your Farm Doc Daily article for this Monday, and you start out with principal acres. And principal crop acres do change in the United States. It's hard to believe that that happens, but they have roughly a 10 million acre range or something like that in total. Can you tell me about crop acres and principal crop acres?
The last few years, they've been pretty consistent. They've been between about 318.3 and 319.6 million acres. Now, there's a lot in principal crop acres. You've got the major field crops, hay's in there, potatoes are in there. There's a lot of different crops that go into principal crop acres, but I think it pretty much encapsulates a wide swath of what we would plant here in the Corn Belt in the major production regions. For me this year, I see that we'll be in that range again, I think. When you take into account principal crop acreage, CRP, and prevent plant, and that's sort of the place I start at when I'm thinking about how many acres there are available out there for us to plant. They've been pretty consistent over the last few years, between about 345 and 346 and a half million. Last year, we had 23 and a half million acres of CRP. This year, according to the January enrollments, we're at 22.4 million acres. So if you think we're going to get rid of some acres via CRP, we're not. So that's one point right there. The other place where I think some acres could go is prevent plant. We did a little less than 1.9 million acres last year. That's well below what we normally do on average. And with the kind of weather we're seeing out in the northern plains and all through the central and the Corn Belt in general, and we've seen some wet weather in the southern plains, yeah, I could see that prevent plant number being more on average, definitely more than 1.9 million acres. So we could see some acres go out there. That's sort of how I start thinking about it from the top down.
But we won't see that number until, I don't know, the July.
No, we won't see that.
Yeah, so it's sometime out.
It's sometime out. And spring weather matters, right? This initial acreage report in March is just a survey of what farmers say they're going to plant. That can change substantially between now and when we get the June acreage report And I think there's a lot of speculation that it will.
Thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Greg Johnson is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. He now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Hey, good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Thank you.
Hey, have you been watching Twitter and Facebook and seen the flooding and what it's done to fields and some of those bottoms and what I guess I'd call icebergs that are just laying out on those fields? Dang.
Yes, I don't know what you call them either, but I certainly feel fortunate here in central Illinois. We're certainly wet, but I think we're going to be in the field a lot earlier than what they will, because that's going to take a long time for those things to melt.
Yeah, so I guess you'd have to feel good if you were just looking at the 3 foot of snow across your field as compared to some of those icebergs, because those things, they might be around for a darn long time. It takes a long time for snow to melt. It'd take a whole lot longer for that to melt, I would think.
Yes, and then, of course, cause all the subsequent river flooding problems down at the Gulf when all that water eventually does find its way down south. So it's going to cause some issues probably for the next 30 days, I would guess.
Yeah, so what will it do to basis?
Well, if it probably will help the rail market out a little bit. It'll probably hurt the Gulf, the barge market a little bit, because I'm guessing with the high water levels on the rivers that they won't be able to get as much down there, so they'll have to get those needs covered by rail. So short term, it should be a little bit friendly basis. Longer term, the grain is still out there, so I don't know that it helps us a lot in the long term, but certainly it should in the short term.
Hey, on that note, I did see, I think, a rail line closure, and the BNSF would be the rail that would be running through Nebraska primarily, and parts of Iowa, the Dakotas. It looked like that was going to cause some problems because the rail lines are even closed. Do you see a problem there?
Well, you know, we'll have to figure out a way to get around that. But you're right. Anything that's going west to the west coast, that's going to be affected by with the BNSF being shut down. So maybe there'll be a little bit more grain coming out of the Gulf instead of off the Pacific Northwest. That would probably be one of those logistical things where overall it doesn't affect the demand, but it maybe affects some logistics.
I want to switch topics, and I think you probably have talked about this a little bit in-house. Farmers didn't get as much fertilizer, in particular anhydrous ammonia, on last year as they wanted to, even in our part of the world. How much of a problem will that be this spring?
I think it contributes to the overall mix as far as whether farmers plant corn or soybeans, and that's one factor. The other factor is farmers like the rotation. I mean, if you look historically here in Illinois over the last 10 years, we've been a 55% corn, 45% bean rotation, and that doesn't change very much, even with some extreme changes in prices. So when you throw in the fact that we didn't get a lot of fall field work done, higher fertilizer prices, and the fact that farmers like that rotation, I guess I'm not sure that we're going to see a lot of extra corn acres here in Illinois anyway.
Any place else that we might see those acres, for instance, in the southeast or out west?
It's awful wet in the south. They should be planting now, and they're behind, and it's awful snow-packed in the north. So I'm not exactly sure where we're going to see those extra corn. Maybe in the extreme far west, maybe in Kansas, places like that. But here in the Midwest, I'm not sure that we're going to see, the trade's looking for 1 to 2 million more acres of corn. I guess I could see that. But as far as that 3 to 5 million that some of them are talking about, I don't see us getting that much extra corn planted.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is now here. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. Mark, I want to start with the flooding that's happening out west. I've been trying to nail some of this down and looking at what the Army Corps of Engineers has said about the Missouri River, where the bulk of this flooding is taking place. They say it's below Gavin's Point. That would be at Yankton, South Dakota. But roughly speaking, I believe that mostly runs along the Iowa-Nebraska border and all the way to the bottom of Nebraska. So if you've traveled Interstate 29 or I-29, that's kind of the area where this is a problem. How much flooding is taking place?
Yeah, well, the amount of flooding, certainly the areas near the Missouri River and its tributaries there, And then areas in between, depending on location, we've seen a larger extent of aerial flooding, especially back a couple of days ago following the bomb cyclone last week, and which was the very exceptional heavy rainfall totals on top of the frozen ground and thick snowpack that had been in place. And so beginning to see some of the rivers recede, at least the tributaries, but still have the Missouri River flooding, which, again, we haven't been able to fully quantify the number of square miles of ag acreage that are currently being impacted. But for much of eastern Nebraska and adjacent areas of Iowa, it's a significant amount.
Are there expectations that this will return with snowpack as it melts?
That is certainly a concern here going forward. And, well, number one, they are in a dry stretch right now. In fact, from now through the end of the week, dry weather will continue. And that started this past weekend. There is going to be another significant precip event here, basically all rain, that's going to be coming up here over the upcoming weekend. And actually, that looks to be followed up by another storm system coming through later on next week. And so number one, there's some additional rainfall across that area, but then longer term, there's still a thick snowpack up across the Dakotas and on into Montana as well. And so with the Missouri River Basin there and that flood wall from the melt, that snow water that will be melted, that will be heading southward here and likely continuing to keep river levels high or at flood levels. Even as we move into April.
That will make for a difficult situation. And this won't just be for the Missouri. This will be across the Mississippi Valley Basin.
No, exactly here. And, number one, for the Mississippi River, we're seeing record, we're seeing some flooding and obviously more rain on the way here. That'll continue also to be an item, at least in the acreage near the river, as we move into April. And then there's also the Red River across, bordering North Dakota and on into Minnesota, moving up into southern Canada. That snow has not melted at all, and that is going to also melt and become a flood, not the next couple of weeks, but as we move basically into April. And so, numerous rivers here and tributaries being impacted at this as we move into the first day of spring coming up shortly.
Yeah, interestingly enough, it you have to think about that as the Red River, of course, flows in the opposite direction. So it flows northward
as opposed.
Yeah, yep. Up into Canada. So running the opposite direction. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois.